Our first matter of action is from the Academic Affairs Committee. For us, please. Okay,
thank you. The first item on the agenda is approval of the Department of Marketing name change to the Department of Marketing and Sales effective November 1, 2008. Is Robert here?
Yes. Not a lot to say except to remind you that in the summer of 2007, the board approved the Center for Professional Selling. In the fall of 2007, approved the minor for the department. And what they are asking me now to do is move it to a Department of Marketing and Sales. There are 90 marketing majors in the fall of 2008 who have a sales concentration. There are an additional 50 students from across campus who are taking a sales minor. So it truly is a sought-after program. And they feel like it will help in terms of recruiting and identification to include sales in the title of the department. So I urge you to consider that.
This comes as a recommendation from the committee that has already approved it, so it doesn't need a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The next item is giving to Professor Richard Cantrell the status of faculty emeritus. He is Associate Professor of Economics.
Just to remind those of you that are new that we regularly bring to you recommendations for faculty from emeritus status that retired from the university and served it well. And this time we just have one. So I hope you will approve it.
Again, this needs no second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I do have one more.
Okay. Enrollment
report.
Oh, no, you have something.
Yeah. Yeah. You and Dean, if you'll...
May we? Okay.
Yes, please.
I'm sorry. If we could just update it for us.
Yes, sure.
I want to ask Dr. Taylor. Dr. Taylor is the Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management, getting pretty sophisticated in his way of tracking enrollment. And
if you'll get this page out of your red package here, your supplemental packet, it will help you track Dr. Taylor's report.
And I'm going to ask Dr. Taylor to make a report on that.
Thank you, Dr. Birch. This is the official data snapshot that we have presented to the Council on Post-Secondary Education. And I do want to, first of all, point out that this number changes every day for us. We do have to draw a line in the sand, if you will, and we have to present a number as our official snapshot data. And so this is the number that we have provided to the state. I do want to say that even though we're going to present these numbers to you, they've continued to increase. We've had additional students that have enrolled, and so we've had people that have come in for by terms. And so the numbers keep growing. They change constantly, day in, day out. We have students that will drop out and leave, and students that will come in. But I'm going to give you the official word that we've given to the council. Of course, the official snapshot, you can see that our enrollment is at 19,761, and that is an increase over last year, and we're delighted to see that increase. There was a lot of hard work that was done across the campus. All the colleges, they all put in and worked hard at this. We've had a great team that's worked really hard at pushing to make these final numbers happen. I'm not going to go through this whole thing, but I'm going to point out just a few things. The undergraduate number over on the right-hand side column, you'll see that it is up 2.77% over last year. It's now 16,966. And our graduate number is also up 1.38% at 2,795. If you look at our full-time, part-time numbers, you can see that both of those are up. If we saw a growth in our enrollment, but it was only in part-time, then that would be a little bit problematic for us, but you can see that it's grown on both sides of the fence there, so we're pleased with that. If you look at the first-time freshmen, you can see that that number is up 197 from last year, so our entering class for the freshmen, that's our traditional freshman college student that's coming in, is now at 3,311, and that's up 6.33%. First-time graduate students has also taken a remarkable jump. They're up 110 students over last year at 20, and that's a 29% increase. Great job to the graduate school and to all that support them. They've done a fabulous job with that. If you flip the report over, if you look at the first-time freshmen by ethnicity, you can see that our African-American number has increased over last year by 17.94%. Once again, a lot of hard work from a lot of folks on the campus. We're delighted to see those numbers. Over on the right-hand side, there's been a lot of discussion across the state about transfer students. Our transfer numbers, we are a very transfer-friendly institution. We're working continually to try and make that even more so. You can see that our out-of-state transfer numbers, we've increased by almost 17%. Our KCTCS numbers, not so good right now. I think that we're working very closely with KCTCS. We've got some strategies in place to enhance that. We've been working very close with Madisonville Community College. We've actually agreed with them that we're doing a joint admissions, joint enrollment program with them, and so I'll give you some more information on that later on as that develops. Down at the bottom, the international students, you can see that there's a 7.33% increase in our international student enrollment for this year, and we're delighted that we have some teams that are out there working on that. We've got some new strategies in place to keep pushing that aggressively. Any questions that you have?
I have a question on the first page. The sophomore, is this the retention?
Well, last year our freshman class took a little dip, and so that cohort group is going to, that dip will be felt for the next 4 years, unless we have some other strategies in place to enhance the retention of that student population above and beyond what we've done in the past. We're working on that to see if maybe we can iron out that dip, and there's some possibilities for that, but that's an uphill grind for us, and we're going to do our best to try and resolve that.
From a campus planning standpoint, you recall last year our total number was up significantly. It was mostly part-time. Most of the growth increment was part-time, and as Dean says, our actual freshman number was down slightly, and our financials were flat because of the increases were mostly part-time students. And that variable has changed dramatically this year with the numbers you see here. I'm very pleased with this report, but that reflects why the sophomore. And so next year we expect the junior numbers to be down slightly. And again, we're working on some things to balance those numbers out, as Dean suggested. But I want to compliment Dean, certainly all of your staff, and Dick Bowker. And if you haven't met Dick Bowker, former head of biology, is now dean of our graduate programs. And is doing a superb job, because we have struggled with graduate enrollments in recent years, and it's good to see those trend lines changing. Dick, thank you. But everybody on this campus affects these numbers. All of our faculty, all of our staff, all of our students, because when prospective students learn about us, when they visit this campus, They feel the energy, they get a sense of this place itself, they come to understand the quality of our faculty and the academic experience here. So communicating what the WKU experience is about rests with everybody in this university family. And I don't discount the role our alumni play in ensuring that our enrollment is stable and our trend lines are moving in a positive direction. Growth is not the end-all by any means, but it is important to the economic stability of this institution, particularly at a time when our state funding is in decline, and, as you know from the last 11 years, has been up and down and up and down, more down than up. So enrollment stability and a growing enrollment profile from a financial standpoint is critical, and our challenge is to manage that growth, ensure academic quality, and manage the resources that it generates in ways that continue to ensure a positive trend line when it comes to enrollment. Because if we were to have a declining enrollment, our problems are compounded dramatically. So this is important data for you as a governing board to track. And again, I'm very pleased if you look at the bar chart on the upper left-hand side of the front side of the sheet. For 11, actually this goes back to 1999, but since 1997, going back to the origination of higher ed reform in Kentucky, we continue to lead this state and the enrollment number that drives most everything else that we do as an institution. So this is a terrific report. Congratulations, Dean, to you and your staff, but my congratulations are extended to everybody on this campus because it is truly a team effort.
Thank you.
Like you're doing a good job with China and Vietnam, too.
We've really aggressively worked on our international recruitment, and we've had some new strategies on that, and I think they're working. So look forward to next year seeing a greater increase there.
Is it true that there is more difficulty for international students to get visas to come to study than was the case a few years ago?
Actually, it was, but it's lightening up again. I think if we're seeing that it is still very difficult, but we are hearing that maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel, and that maybe it's lightening up a little bit on the scrutiny. So hopefully.
Boris, is that?
Yes, that's
all right. Thank you very much. All right, the next section, the Executive Committee has taken action to approve a motion to authorize the President to inform amendments to the Master Development Agreement with the City of Bowling Green, Warren County Alliance Corporation, which contain a commitment outlined in the agenda item. This, too, was moved by our committee at the meeting of the committees. And a second is appropriate.
Second.
Any comments or discussion?
Yes.
All right.
You may have received one of these flyers from protesters outside who represent the faculty and staff and students on this campus. And I certainly know my colleagues from staff and the student regents would like to speak to this, so I'll confine my remarks to the faculty. I have seen a firestorm of opposition to this, and I'm going to build on a point that the President made at our committee meetings, which is to say, when we discussed the fact that there doesn't seem to be a lot in this for us and there seems to be a great deal in this for the city, and President Ramsdell said, well, yeah, this is not a great deal. It's not a great deal. And it's not a great deal that impacts the fixed cost of the university at a time that we cannot afford to mortgage ourselves for $250,000 a year, adding to the fixed cost of doing business at the university. The firestorm started when an email about something completely different went out, and this is excerpted in this flyer, talking about sustainability issues and reducing utility costs, for which there's broad-based support amongst the faculty. And as I was explaining to the President yesterday, what's the connection? The connection is the implication in the email, sarcastic or not, is, okay, everybody turn the lights off and reduce the utility costs or nobody's going to get any raises. And it hurt because people are very worried. We have, I'll say it again, open faculty positions. We are not able to replace people who are leaving. People are looking for jobs because of the flatness of many of the things that matter to our work life. Support staff that we need and students need are not available. Again, my colleague can speak to that. We worry that there will be little to no raises. We are troubled by the fact that it may be done on the backs of the students if it does happen. And I question the need for something that really looks like corporate welfare. And I'm a downtown resident. I stand to benefit from this. I think I'm the only downtown resident at the table. I support the TIF wholeheartedly. But if they can't do this without us, then that's just too bad. Then they just can't do it. But we should not tie up the university's resources for 30 years as a fixed cost for something that the employees on this campus don't want, something that is not strategically located, and as many have pointed out, for $7.5 million, we can bond it, do our own garage, put it where we want it. I have issues with parking, but for this much money, we can bond it, do our own. I urge you to vote this down, colleagues.
Thank you.
On behalf of the staff, because I have had more of an overwhelming response from this matter than any other thing that's come to me since I've been on the board, and 100% of the staff are absolutely opposed to this. And in large part, they feel like, again, you know, we do want to keep down fixed costs, and I know we need to do that, and that's important. And when we say that, you know, every dime that we save on fixed costs can then be put to salaries, and then we take a motion to increase fixed costs, you know, it looks really bad. And it looks like we're supporting something that's going to actually decrease the salaries. I looked at the salaries in this packet of the ones that we're going to vote on later, and there's all the salary compression for faculty, none for staff. You know, it's an issue we've really got to look at, and there's no way that I can go on and vote for something that's going to increase our debt on a yearly basis if that's taking out money that could be possibly used for the staff. And again, it's a morale issue at this point. The staff are very, very concerned about this and very against it. That's why the protesters were out there, because they really are passionate about this and care about it. I've got emails from people who are telling me about, you know, they work here, they're working a second job to make ends meet, and, you know, they're not a single parent, but they need a raise, they need to have more money, and they're working and they're dedicated, and everyone is dedicated here. You know, we want to support what's best for the university, but, you know, we also have to look at that. And again, 100% of the staff are totally against this, and I too would urge you, please take that into consideration, what it's going to do to the morale of the university if we pass something that they feel like is detrimental to their very income.
I think one of the things that students, you know, we will never be in support of higher tuition, but something that we're trying to really push in the Student Government Association is a belief that if we have stable funding from freshmen, you know, we will have stable tuition. And students are concerned, and I've received, I didn't think this was as big of an issue until I received about 100 emails yesterday. And several students are concerned that this action will bring forth a view that we aren't putting our priorities, you know, into some of the things that we need to. Of course, this is, you know, I've read over the July 07 minutes, and I'd like to hear more information before we make a vote. But right now, the students have spoken to me, and they're very concerned. And students even got this email on the energy crisis, and someone jokingly asked me, are students going to get an email saying if we don't reduce our usage that tuition will go up as a result of that? I mean, is that part of the sustainability plan?
Well, the sustainability committee hadn't met yet, but no, there's no correlation between a sustainability effort and tuition that one could measure. Now, an accumulation of all things in a total financial plan, increased utility costs could affect the cost of an education here because they're rising so dramatically, but that would be no different than any other financial obligation of the institution. But I'll have other thoughts in a moment, but no, there's not a direct correlation between energy costs and tuition, but sure, energy costs accumulated with a number of things could affect the cost of education here. It's like any corporate enterprise that has to pay the utility bill.
All right. Any other comments from any other board members? Yes.
Well, of course, we certainly, you know, don't want to do anything that affects the morale of the university, but there's a broader picture here, and the broader picture is this, that this university's got to continue to grow, and somehow or other, faculty and staff pay consideration shouldn't be a part of facilities. But we're at a point in time right now where the state is not going to give us any more money for any building programs, and I don't see how you could go out and we need the parking facility. We're going to need it down the road as we grow. If you were to look at the construction costs, the land costs, the debt service, and I understand the maintenance and staffing is included in this, legal counsel, could you possibly, do you think the construction, that the maintenance is included in the, all operation costs are included in the lease, so.
Yes, the
and further, and I have no dog in this, okay? None. But further, it would appear that if we want to take, I think everybody would agree, we want to get as much of the parking off campus as we can to keep the campus as green as we can, to keep these beautiful buildings, as pollution-free as we can. This will accomplish that goal. And also, since we're going to be spreading towards the downtown area, I think the view is that when you come into the city and you cross that river, you're going to look up that hill and you're going to see university. And it's going to tie the university more to the city, and the city will become more like a university town or university city. And if you look at any Eastern college, you know, their campuses are spread all over. We're talking about the new business college, perhaps not being part of this main campus here, the new nursing school. We're going to need that parking. And I remember a time period when that's all that you heard, and I was not involved in Western at the time. All you heard was parking. Every consensus, every poll, everything that was ever done, the biggest complaint, faculty, staff, and students, was parking. And I had children up here at that time, and all I heard at home was, there's no place to park up there. And we need to address that future need. Now we're going to be in the same situation.
And Jim, I agree, but right now, according to this, you know, I don't think there can be an amendment, but, you know, it's only going to be available for Western from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
That's what we need for commuter parking. And the evening hours, we have plenty of parking on campus for students taking evening courses. There would be no students parking in this structure for evening courses, unless we have courses downtown, at which point we'll address that in other ways. But in 20 to 30 years, we're going to be adding a lot more parking downtown, would be my hunch.
Well, Jim gets at the conundrum of parking, though, which is, yes, you always hear, you're right, and particularly students, but faculty and staff, too, need more parking. But it's the conundrum. What they want is parking close in, close to where they are. And, in fact, what I have found out in the last few weeks since our committee meetings, there are at least, you know, couple hundred unutilized spaces at the Campbell Lane lot where we have shuttle service. You know, the downtown parking lot is not going to solve anybody's concern about parking. It's at least as far. It requires another shuttle route. It's not really going to do anything to deal with the nursing building, which the one thing they've got at the medical center is parking and plenty of it. And there's plenty of it, the business college, if it is built in the TIF, will still be closer to main campus than it would be to this downtown parking garage. I got an email from a Gordon Ford faculty member. Again, the people who know how to deal with money have been checking in pretty heavily with me. And one person said, if the university was my client, I'd say, why would you consider this deal? It does nothing for you. You don't need this. You don't want this. You know, bad deal. Bad deal.
Well, let me put a couple things in perspective. First of all, this is not a vote on the lease. You approved that lease on July 13, 2007. And the city took that board action and began to construct a tax incremental financing district. This is not a vote on the lease. It simply isn't. It's a vote on the amendment to the lease, which the city, in putting together the financial structure for the TIF, asked us if we would consider a longer lease for 100 more spaces. You were briefed on that on November 2nd, 2007, and it took a while before that agreement was finalized and was brought to you at the next meeting, which were our committee meetings on October 10, 2008. I'm convinced that this is an action much more for the future than it is for the present. It's an action that the city has asked us to support, and we're an important part of this community. The payment would begin, I am projecting, in the 2010-2011 fiscal year at the earliest, because the lease doesn't begin until July 1 of the year following the completion of construction of the parking structure. So it hadn't even been designed yet. In fact, the city hadn't even sold the bonds yet. So, 14 to 18 months construction period for something of this nature. July 1, 2009, you got July 1, 2010. It may be July 1, 2011 before this would ever come into play. Ann Mead has set the money aside in the budget, which will accumulate growth between now and then. This will not affect salaries until the 11-12 year, and only then probably might be a stretch to say that it would affect salary increases at that point. But, yes, it would be a fixed cost for that period of time. But by the time that this lease unfolds, downtown Bowling Green and this campus are going to be married. That's the only direction we can grow as a campus. And the Parking and Transportation Committee has sought for some time a North Campus satellite parking area. And I can, Patty, I can show you the exact data that it would cost twice this much to build an equal size parking structure. We're paying, including debt service, $16 million for the structure right over here, with about 600 net spaces, yes, more spaces. But by the time you add the debt service in, and then buy the land, pay your annual maintenance costs, pay your insurance, a new parking structure of the same size would cost far more than $7.5 million over 30 years. $250,000 a year is going to get you about $2.5 million in bond capacity. You're not going to build much parking structure for $2.5 million. So there's a lot of numbers being thrown around, and that's fine. I understand this has become an emotional issue, but the time for this debate was 1997, long before any of the variables that may be prompting this debate in October of 2008 were even conceptualized. Don't forget, it was just 1 year ago today that we were approving a strategic plan that had a significant growth variable in state funding. And the state, through the Council on Post-Secondary Education, was approving a funding model that called for significant growth in state funding in October of 2007, only to find out in December that not only was that not going to be forthcoming, but we were going to take a significant cut. So the world has changed a lot since you acted in July of 2007 on this lease agreement. And I don't question that. And did I say that this may not be a great deal? It's not a great deal, but it's a good deal, and it's a sound financial deal, and it does project to our future, and it does bond a partnership that we have with the city of Bowling Green, Kentucky. And how many times have we gone to the city for help? And how many times will we go to the city for help in the future? In fact, Jennifer Tugas, there are some things that we're about to go to the city for in a significant way as it relates to parking and transportation. The city's already moved forward with a TIF, and the state just yesterday approved an expanded TIF that's going to benefit us. It's a partnership that is significant, and this parking structure is located one block from the square downtown, and I'm satisfied that by the time this lease begins to unfold, we'll be seeking a lot more parking in that area to help serve our students. But is it a great deal? No, I'm not going to call it a great deal. Is it a good deal? Yes, I think it's important. And do we have 100% opposition? No, we don't have 100% opposition. I've received a lot of communication from people who aren't going to get involved in our factory staff voice email network that, wait a minute, this... It is not 100%. There are some who are very vocal and emotional about this, granted, and most of that has come about in the last week or two, and I understand that, but it's this board's responsibility to consider what is on the table now and to think as much about 20 to 30 years from now as it is to think about what's on the table in the next few months or even the next couple of years. So... Executive Committee has acted. We've discussed this at our committee meetings on October 10. I have lots of information here, chronologies, timelines, summaries, financial perspectives, advantages, cost comparisons to build another structure of like size and context. I mean, I could circulate a lot of things to you, but I won't. Unless you would like to extend the discussion.
Dr. Lindsdale, I view this simply as the amendment that's necessitated because of the meltdown of financial markets.
in large measure.
I don't know where your faculty's been, but you try to issue some tax-exempt bonds in today's market and see what's happened to the financial institutions throughout the United States. And it's panic, okay? I can see why this amendment is necessary in order to get this project off the ground and go to market. You're not going to have any financial institution wanting to buy this paper, wanting to underwrite all this in this day and time without this kind of financial commitment. So I think it's prudent. We've already made the obligation. All we're doing is extending it by 10 years in order to enhance. That's all it is. It's credit enhancement in order to have the lowest possible interest rate, which helps the city and the county and us. And I think it's a dire mistake for us to back out of this partnership. And I think the worst thing in the world would be for us not to support Bowling Green or Warren County, since we made the commitment. They benefit us, and we benefit them. So the synergy is there, and the university needs to look forward and to continue that synergy. So I'm in full heart favor of this amendment.
I agree totally with Larry, and I don't think that we should not move forward on this because we've had legislative cuts in the budgets and all, and to tie the salaries of the faculty and staff to this movement, which has already been approved, but in the long run is going to benefit us. And in order to get the funding and all that's needed for this project now, like you said, I don't think that you could issue bonds and be in the same situation and get what we need to get out of it. And if we can go with this, and partner with the city of Bowling Green, I think it's just a win-win situation for us. I mean, it is difficult that we don't have the finances to raise the salaries of the faculty and staff, but we have to encourage them to stay positive, and that we, at some point, will get some help from the legislature and can restore those finances.
I just want to point out a few things. When you talk about how much it would cost to build a parking structure, you can't compare. If the university built a parking structure, it would own it and have a complete control of it. It could put it where it wanted to be. So when you're comparing the two, it's not really apples to apples. It's apples to oranges. And I just want to point that out. Also, there was a quote from a university employee about this. It said the downtown spots will also promote Western's relationship with the city and encourage downtown economic growth and job growth. That might be fine. That's great for the city of Bowling Green to do that, but I don't think it's the responsibility of Western to do that, especially if it means any kind of tuition increase for the students of Western. That's not the role of this university.
Of course, I would debate that. Our mission is to drive the economy of this region, particularly the region closest to us.
Okay, then I have a lot of arguments of how you can do that if you're talking about the region. I'm talking about the city of Bowling Green. I do not think that the students who come from all over just need to drive the city of Bowling Green. There's lots of ways that it can be spread out, and believe me, some of the other parts of the region are in desperate needs of WKU dollars that they're not getting. So, I mean,
I
think it's too concentrated.
It is very broad. I would agree with that.
Also, I mean, everybody's read the headlines this morning. The state's budget situation is bleak. We have yet to get the final bill on what it's going to cost to go to Division I in football. And I don't think you're going to have the growth in enrollment that you're projecting. I just don't think it's going to happen if you look at the demographics of where the population's going. And I just think this is something that we're going to be saddled with, and you're not going to get your benefit, the total benefit from. Talking about looking from a legal standpoint, if this was my client, and they came in, and you signed a lease, fine. The lease maybe wasn't a great deal, but you go forward with it, and then the other party comes back and says it's going to be doubled in price, but you're not going to get double the benefit. I tell them, say no, I'm not going to go along with this. This is not a good deal for you. So yes, the original agreement has been voted on, but we can say to them, no, you've got to come up with those extra dollars from someplace else, not from WKU.
And I wouldn't say I support us helping the city and working with the city, and I think that's a great partnership. And if the economy was better, if we thought we could count on the legislature and giving us more funding, but we can't. I mean, they're saying today they don't know how much the final deficit's going to be right now at the state level. I wouldn't support building another structure on our own. Right. I think we do have empty parking spaces. I think if we change some class schedules around, I think we could do a variety of things that wouldn't cost us that much money. And since we made that original agreement, the economy has changed a lot. And therefore, extending that, you know, is not in our best interest, I don't believe. And, you know, like I said, the emails that I received personally, not on the voice, but these were emails that I received personally, every single one of them were against this, and I received numerous ones from people all over the university. But yeah, I don't believe, I wouldn't support building a new one on our own, because I don't think we can keep building and that we can keep increasing our fixed cost at a detriment to the staff and the faculty salaries.
And I'd like to add to, I mean, I realize that we've talked a lot about bread and butter salary issues and tuition issues, but I would like to correct the perception that it's only about that. It's not only about that. I mean, for people who can't, I mean, when we talk about salaries, we're also talking about not being able to staff our departments, not having enough faculty to offer the courses. Regent Bowles and I were just discussing the fact that there are a lot of courses that people in his field need that we can't offer in the history department because we have vacant positions and we don't have the personnel. This is a lifeblood of the university issue, and it's time for us to make some difficult decisions about the changed financial situation and the difference between what we want and what we need. And I don't want this, but I don't think we need it either. And we're not back. I mean, you're right. We have enacted the original lease, but we do not have to. We don't have to go with this amendment. And if we don't, then the city just has to figure out a different way to do it. And I'm sure that their leadership is capable of it. But it's not our responsibility. But we really are crunched to the bone in every aspect of what it is the university does. And we've got to make some hard choices about what we want and what we need. The employees and students don't want this. And we don't need this.
And I hate to debate the time issue again, but I mean, if we want students to come downtown, going back to the Helping Bowling Green, you know, students go down for, we have, you know, Dynamic Leadership Institute banquets, we go to the Capital Arts to enjoy a show, we bank downtown, we do things downtown, but normally that happens, you know, in the evening, and if it's to 6 p.m., you know, if there was a Western guaranteed spot, students would, you know, I think benefit from that, and that would be a great reason, you know, to you know, if there was another benefit. But, and I know we're not debating that because that was a part of the original. It's not a change in the amendment, but I would hope that they would at least would have suggested a time difference, because I know Regent Johnson even in the last meeting was concerned about the 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. clause.
I'm going to call for the question now. We've had time for people to share. All in favor, please raise your hand. Okay. All opposed, raise your hand. The motion carries? Thank you. All right. The next item is 6.2.2. To authorize and approve the purchase of 2.01 acres of property located in Rocky Hill Road, Warren County, Kentucky, to be utilized as an educational reserve under a grant from the Kentucky Land Heritage Conservation Fund Board. And this has been brought with a motion from our executive committee. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion or questions? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, that motion carries.
Let me, if I could add one comment to this. We did not bring it to you in this meeting because we try not to do business in that manner, but just in the last 2 weeks, because of the momentum that this initiative and this biodiversity preserve, we are the beneficiary of yet another Kentucky Heritage Land Trust grant to buy an additional, Blaine, you remember the number of acres in this new arrangement?
We have 200 acres, and then we're working with
this just came since our meeting on October 10, yet another investment on the part of the state's Heritage Land Trust Fund to further expand, in addition to what you just approved. And I could have brought that to you to approve, but again, we'll do that in January, and they know that this needs to, you know, run through the normal cycle. But we have created something really special in this biodiversity preserve, mainly in Hart County, at the edge of Mammoth Cave National Park. And David, this is something that I don't know that we've had a chance to talk much about, but it's we're now over 1,000 acres and just a spectacular opportunity for teaching and research and a very rich Green River watershed ecosystem for both endangered species and plant and grasslands and all the rich elements of biodiversity in that watershed as it flows into Mammoth Cave National Park. But I just, so go on. You're going to have another one of these at a January meeting to further expand this. And this is, we look at all the things that the state may not be doing, but from time to time we need to reflect on the things the state is doing. And this is an important part of our academic infrastructure. And I could not be more pleased, particularly for our faculty in biology and other related disciplines in our biodiversity initiative. So congratulations, Blaine, to you and your colleagues. Great work. And these are not things that come automatically. The things we're pursuing and our faculty are just doing great work, just great work.
Okay. Our next item for action is agenda item 6.2.3, to approve the first reading of recommended amendments to the bylaws of the Board of Regents. Already in a motion. Is there a second? David. Any questions, comments?
I have one concern, and I'm not sure because this is the correct parliamentary ruling on this, because I know this is the first reading, so we'll have another reading in January. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
An amendment requires a second reading.
Okay.
And then a two-thirds vote.
My only concern with this, and I spoke to the president about this, is when you delete the language including facilities, renovation, and new construction, and you pull that from student affairs, I think that the student regent should have and should be able to work with the Vice President of Campus Services, you know, with this group and have a say in this. I think that Student Affairs should still have a purview over this. I think that, and I know this is trying to go with the WKU reorganizational change of May 5, but I still think that the Student Affairs Committee should work with facilities, renovation, and new construction.
That's an excellent point, actually.
But I don't know how to.
Parliamentarian, what do we do with this? We so note that,
you could propose an amendment to the proposed amendment.
Okay. I propose that we amend striking bullet point 3 completely from this request.
Help me with that, because I don't see how to call it bullet point 3.
Under the recommendation,
would a different amendment be to delete point 3 from the changes to the bylaws?
Yes.
Because it would just simply leave the old bylaw in place. Is that a different way to say it?
Just understand what you're doing. What you're doing is placing two vice presidents in a position of staffing a single board committee, which is
not
an insurmountable thing. It's a little bit of an awkward thing from a procedural and administrative perspective, but that would John and Howard, you all have to be the dynamic duo when it comes to that committee should that point be changed. The executive committee is typically served as the committee that addresses matters that do not administratively fit into the three committee structure of academic, finance, and student matters. So, I leave that entirely up to the board. But it would be the only committee that would have two vice presidents that would be staffing that committee. Not a big deal, but it would be a curious a structure. We all worked together for about 35 years, so you can probably do it on this. Excuse me, I didn't mean to give away anything there.
That's quite all right.
Yes.
don't delay anything, but if we could just hear a moment from John and Howard. I know they got sort of broadsided by this. They weren't expecting it, about what their thoughts are. If we're going to make a change affecting them, we need to hear perhaps what their thinking is. We don't handcuff them or anything.
I don't have a problem with it whatsoever. I've come from student affairs. I was in student affairs when I was a kid for 25-plus years. Howard and I have joint staff meetings as it is now. We've been working there for a long time. I don't have any concerns at all.
I concur with that. We'll make it work.
I need your assistance.
All right. I didn't hear the second to the amendment to the amendment. To the second to strike out point three.
All right, we have second.
Then you would need to proceed to a vote on that amendment,
amendment
the discussion has ended.
All right. Discussion ended?
Well, where is this being moved to? Is it moving to the executive committee?
No,
it would just stay like it is. No, but the proposal that we're moving right now is to move it to executive committee, and he can't be on the executive committee?
I was appointed to the executive committee, the chair and vice chair.
Which is the one
job
a student region would never have.
Gotcha. The one place he can't, that's it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I got it.
Do we then need a separate amendment to, if we vote to amend, if we vote yes on the first amendment, then we would require another motion to amend the second point, yes?
That would complicate it a little bit.
Let's listen up here.
If number three entails these other matters, then I think the simplest way to handle this would be with a friendly amendment. That could be proposed, and then you could ask if there are any objections to that friendly amendment. Then that would be incorporated into the original proposal.
The other area that I have no concern.
Forrest has observed, and she's exactly right. With this proposal, the only thing you do is bullet number one on page 49. The only thing you're moving, the only thing you're doing is adding human resources to the Finance and Budget Committee. Everything else stays the same.
Exactly.
So when we go back to the first page, the one that has the action item,
you would delete.
You would be deleting the second, third, and fourth.
Well, let me see the second bullet.
Talking about page 50?
Yes,
talking about page 49.
You would through it.
Just the third bullet.
Just
goes away.
Except the second bullet says to the executive committee. So the second bullet would then read: strike proposals for construction, academic, administrative service facilities from the Finance and Budget Committee. Period.
I make that friendly amendment to his amendment. You accept the friendly amendment?
I do accept. There's, you got that?
So we need to vote on the amendment to the amendment first, and then we vote on the amendment, and then we vote on...
We don't vote on it.
No, you vote on the,
this is the first
proposal
reading.
With the proposal. Amendment.
All right.
Yes.
So the proposal of the amendment to the amendment, all in favor of the proposal to the amend the amendment.
Aye.
Indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Now we need to vote on the amendment.
The first reading.
This is the first reading, so
first reading.
It would not require a vote.
It does not require one.
Okay.
At this meeting.
Good.
All right. Would you record we need to vote on that then, Madam Secretary, when we come back, so you'll have that included in our action items. All right. We do not need to take any action to accept this. It is written as an action item here.
Yes.
To approve the first reading. We need to do that. All right. A motion to approve the first reading comes to you from the Executive Committee. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Interesting. Okay. Begins the amendments to the amendments to the amendments. Okay. We have, as item 6.2.4, a approved by the executive committee to make changes. And all in favor of those indicate for this, indicate by saying aye. I'm sorry, did we have a second? Pardon me.
Second.
Thank you. All right. Any comments or questions? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Update on the preliminary report. Robin Taylor.
All right. Thank you. You all have the preliminary report in your packet, and what that just shows you is what is currently approved in terms of our federal appropriations for the 2009 fiscal year and what is pending. Action on the Department of Defense was taken prior to the, I guess, recess of the Congress prior in October. And so we were very fortunate to receive a $6 million federal earmark for our partnership with Electronic Warfare Associates. This is our cyber defense lab and the work that we're doing in Homeland Security. So that is the one thing we know we have in place for fiscal year 2009. All of the others are pending action when they return from this recess at some point after the November elections. And as you can imagine, we're a bit on pins and needles waiting to see what happens with the election and whether or not these will indeed go through. But if they do go through, that's another $8.5 million. Most of them are projects that are ongoing. The MESONET, this would probably be the last year of funding to complete the MESONET project, which is a weather monitoring network that we're building across the state. The Agriculture Research Service facility has some additional construction funds in it. Those construction funds are building. Hopefully at some point we will get enough money together to actually be able to build that building, and we're looking forward to that. That's a great project. And then the community bikeway, I'd point that one out. That's a new project that will, Jennifer, I think this year, that project will create a bikeway that will go across the campus and connect from, I guess, the McNeil area over to the downtown area. I got that correct. And that's a new project. We've actually been trying to get that for a couple of years. And then equipment for the Ogden College of Science and Engineering. Some of that has already gone through, I believe, in the previous budget, so we already have a robotics lab under construction in EST, Environmental Science Technology Building, and this would be the completion of that additional equipment for the new building, that's the new Snow Hall. So these are $8.5 million pending, and that is, at this point, although a great report, is very much uncertain.
Thank you, Robin. Any questions of Robin?
I would just information. Robin has prepared a list of the federal appropriations for the last 10-year time frame that just might be of some value to you as you put year-to-year progress in this regard in context. And we went through the last year or so where direct appropriations were not in the federal budget much at all. To getting back on track this year, so
what you'll see is the first project that I showed in my records is 1998, and in my previous life I think there may have been one in 1997, but it was small. So we began counting these federal projects in 1998. You can see, yeah, we sort of averaged around $1.5 million, and then move up to
more of those, if anybody wants.
$5 million for a few years, and then all around 10 to 11 million for a few years. In 2007, what I show is the 1.3 million. We actually had over 15 million pending that year. That was the year of 2006 was the year of that action, the election cycle. When they came back, new leadership was in place, and they determined they would not pass a federal budget, so we lost all of those projects. Which would have been a great year for us. And then last year we hovered around 8 million. What I don't show you are numbers on these projects that are what we call soft earmarks, where we get language but no funds. But overall, it's been a great program for WKU, $58 million. And quite frankly, this is not a partisan statement, but you can see from the record, I mean, much of this comes from Senator McConnell. We've had some great support from Congressman Lewis, who will no longer be with us after this election, in terms of being in Congress anyway, and Senator Bunning, but the vast majority of this has been from Senator McConnell. So it's a great list. I hope you'll take a look at it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Our next item is construction project status report by John Osborne.
Give us just a second to get things pulled together. While we're doing that, setting up, I've got a typical virtual tour of the campus of 10 of our projects in progress for you this morning. But I've also asked for some guests to come in and give us a little bit of a focus on one of the projects in particular. So while we're getting set up, let me make an introduction here while we're getting set up. Many of you, as you know, have had contact with Mr. Doug Hall in the past, who was the director of our planning, design, and construction department. And you may have heard that he has accepted another position and left the university. And as a result, we went through a search process, and we have hired a new person to take that position. I'd like to introduce Brian Russell to you this morning.
Good morning.
Welcome, Brian.
Brian is the new director of planning, design, and construction for our campus. He comes to us with a very good extensive background in both commercial and residential construction. He's a WKU graduate. And he's thrilled to be here. He's been on the job for 3 weeks, so.
Been very busy.
Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. I'll share a funny story with you. A few days ago, I needed to get some information about some of our capital projects, and so I sent Brian an email message asking for some specific numbers on some fiber going to a particular site and needed some level of detail, and Brian's only been with us, as he said, a few weeks, and so I sent it to Brian Russell, expecting a prompt, informative response, and this is Brian Russell, and so we have a student named Brian Russell got that email from me. I have no idea what he's doing with that request right now, but some student is scrambling around trying to find out what the heck is this name. When do I have to have this information?
Is he in the room?
I don't think so.
He may have a report for us.
It wasn't for this meeting, but it was pretty important at the time.
Is it engineers?
As you can see, I've got 10 projects that I wanted to cover with you today. But before we go into the PowerPoint presentation, I want to focus first on the renovations that are occurring at our science campus, in particular Snell Hall. And so I've asked John Whitney and Blaine Farrell. John is the principal architect for the project, and Blaine is now the dean of the college for the project. So I thought that this would be a good time at each of our project reports that we take a focus on one of the projects, and I can't think maybe 10 minutes on that project, and then we'll just cover the rest of them in the regular fashion. So with no further description, I'll turn over to these gentlemen.
Okay. I'm very pleased to be here today, and I'm going to try to keep it short. You've got to recognize this stuff is endlessly fascinating to me, so I've got to control myself. But basically, what I want to do is I want to talk about Snell Hall briefly, but I want to talk about it in conjunction with the recently completed Engineering and Biological Sciences building and the soon-to-be-renovated Thompson Complex Center wing, because the three facilities are going to all work together. What we've been doing with the College of Science is we've been going through a very extensive programming process to understand how the various departments work together, how they don't work together, and how they need to be as we proceed into the future. So we're trying to find ways to put them in the right places in these buildings. So let's start. First of all, we're well along with construction. If you've driven over on that end of the campus recently, you've seen that the building is out of the ground. They're getting ready to start laying stone and brick. They're working inside, they're putting up studs and drywall, the mechanical systems are in place. It's coming along very well. It's targeted for completion in the spring. So this building will look more or less like that and be ready to operate for the fall semester of 2009. Where we are in terms of the three buildings working together, this is EBS, Engineering Biological Sciences. This is Snow Hall, and this is Thompson Center Wing right here. This is the basement of Engineering Biological Sciences and Snow Hall. EBS is, the green is laboratory space, the blue is classroom space, and the beige is support space and offices. So on the in the basement of EBS, we've basically got engineering labs. In the basement of Snow Hall, we have computer science labs and computer science classrooms and mechanical space. Next one here. Let's see if we can do this without falling apart. As we move up in the buildings, we see that this is the first floor of EBS. It is student project rooms for engineering, its faculty offices, and some support spaces, some lab spaces. The first floor of Snow Hall, again, computer labs, computer classrooms, a big lectorium. We've got tiered seating and we'll seat approximately 200 people. And then we're going to be connecting through into the basement of Thompson Center Wing from Snow Hall at two points here. And the basement of Thompson Center Wing will be some shop space, some physics labs, the electron microscope lab for biology, and some other support spaces. This is the entrance to the Snow Hall, another entrance down here facing North Wing. That's the entrance to Engineering and Biological Sciences. And then moving up again. This is the second floor of EBS. The top floor is essentially a biology floor, biology labs. This is basically what that floor is. It's almost entirely biology labs. The second floor is Snow Hall. Again, biology labs here. A biology lectorium here. And then connecting in to Thompson Center Wing, we've got biology offices, and we've got computer science offices. And then this is the entrance off of State Street into Thompson Center Wing.
You notice that they line these hallways up. That if we had a bridge, we could connect them.
That's a very nice connection there, potential connection. That floor lines up with that floor. There's a bridge there. These biology labs will be connected to these biology labs, to the biology offices here. As it stands right now, there's going to be a professor standing there waving at a professor over here, you know, sign language. Level? Okay. Now, because Thompson Center Wing has only a 12-foot floor height, there's an intermediate floor here. The second floor of Thompson Center Wing is essentially physics labs and physics offices. Now, you can connect into Snell Hall. There's a staircase that goes up and down. So there's a staircase that will take you down one halfway or up one halfway to the floor. So we're still connected at that point. All right. Here we are at level 3 in Snell Hall. This is the roof of Engineering and Biological Sciences over here. And again, level 3 of Thompson Center Wing. And what we have here is biology labs on this floor again, another big classroom, some small classroom space here. This becomes mostly a chemistry floor. We've got some chemistry support spaces. We've got chemistry offices on this floor, so chemistry is taking over this floor. And then finally, we go to the top floor of both Snow Hall and Thompson Center Wing. And on this floor, we've got chemistry labs, and chemistry classrooms. And then this floor in Thompson Center Wing is essentially all chemistry labs. We're renovating that entire floor for new chemistry labs. And again, this is a direct connection through. So chemistry labs, it all works together very nicely. Thompson Center Wing plan you've seen here is all the renovated plan. It's not the plan as it is right now. It's the plan that we'll get when we get that project done.
Again, just like John, I could talk forever, but I don't want to do that.
And it's still fascinating.
I know it's all fascinating, but what struck me is when we started this project, it's all coordinated. And the faculty were told that they would get a new building. You'd think they'd be ecstatic. Well, you get just the opposite response because they've had their hopes built before and nothing happened. And so it's really great that this happened. But they wrangled for about a year, and they came up with the plan themselves. They came up with the strategy. And what I loved about it is, if you've noticed, this new building is all classrooms. It's all student-centered. It's all learning-centered. They gave the best space for the student instruction, which speaks highly of our faculty. All the offices, you'll notice, will be in the central wing. Right now, we have them in north wing, and right at this moment, you can see it if you look up by the water tower actually going up. But STH, Science Technology Hall, is being renovated to take math in the dean's office. And math occupies a third floor of central wing right now, so it's critical to move them over there so that we have swing space in north wing when we get ready to renovate the central wing. So all this was all coordinated by them, and they came up with that plan as a group, which is really nice. So there's a big buy-in to it. So when we move into that next year, that leave a little bit of space right now, but that renovating those offices is critical, and that was designed to keep all the departments contiguous, because when people communicate with each other, they're a lot friendlier and they work better together. And they're right next to their classroom spaces, which was also designed that way, and so when we move math in our office over there next to their classroom spaces in SDH. So the campus is more cohesive in the science campus, but the other big thing is, if you'll notice, this is the front of the Ogden College now. We reversed the face of it. So now it faces the Chestnut Street, and we actually feel like we're part of the university. Before, we were facing across the street at everybody else, and we're looking out there, and that was the front. And this is really significant. It really makes a nice portal into the university at this point. We feel like we're now connected with the rest of the campus, which is a big thing. The planetarium has not been mentioned, but there's a chance to upgrade the ejection system to make it IMAX-like. Which now we can use for recruiting. We get 11,000 students in there a year. And we can put a really nice presentation on there. The president brought this idea back from the University of Louisville. And we can also do biology and chemistry and anything you want to put in there now. We can use it for a multi-purpose if you have this kind of technology. It's about $1 million, so that's in the next phase, which is really very important. The USDA building will eventually, we hope, occupy where the North Wing is right now. And every day, every Tuesday and Thursday, I teach a comparative anatomy lab, which I've taught for 30, it's my 31st year, and I've never had ventilation. And I'm looking across the window to this new building going up, and I want 1 year where I have ventilation and I have a nice lab that I can have those students in. So it's really, to me, very exciting, personally. And the last thing is I want to thank Dr. Ransdale, because the tenacity, the persistence, in all the previous presidents, we would jump from one project to another. And I like the consistency in sticking to the game plan. This is well thought out. We're going to stick to it. And he's got more patience than mere mortals. So I appreciate that very much.
This project has been, so far, 11 years in the making, and probably another 3 or 4. And it's involved 6 buildings and $100 million. In round numbers. My very first month on the job in 1997, I met with every member of every department, every member of every faculty of every department on this campus. And I was assessing and prioritizing and trying to get a grasp of most pressing needs, physical and otherwise. And it was abundantly clear that we had to come to the aid of our sciences, life and physical sciences. No faculty in this campus was in as deteriorated and deplorable, had to live and study and research and work in as deplorable conditions as our science faculty has had to deal with for a long time. And I made it very clear 30 days into the job that, okay, science comes first. And we're going to stay with this until we get it done. And it just takes a long time. And we got one more. $15 million state appropriation. It's our top priority going into to the next funding cycle. I think it's $15 million. But
yeah, I think
it's
inflation.
Okay.
Which includes the planetarium.
Including the planetarium. We have one more funding, right? to get done in the next legislative session, and that will complete the sciences. And then we turn our attention to business and Elizabethtown as the two priorities in waiting after that. But we're going to complete the sciences, and the USDA building, by the way, is a federally funded project that we're $7 million in hand, but it's going to take another few federal budgets to complete that federal research lab that will go where the North Wing now sits. So that one is on track. It's just going to take some time, but sooner or later we're going to finish the sciences. But from a state funding standpoint, one more state appropriation, then we move on to other colleges.
Allison, did you have a question?
Well, I don't want to take off a bigger pipe than we can chew, but is environmental science technology, is that on a long-term plan to be renovated?
Long-term plan.
I know. Isn't it the Lewis construction before mass media? That's an academic.
That was the last academic construction project built on this campus before we started this campus rebuilding project, and that was 1976.
That tells a lot right there. But,
yeah, it does.
But EST, you know, that's once it's all. I mean, I just can imagine how nice that's going to be, and I hope that the Science College does something good for the Snell family and share in their excitement on this. And I think it's a great opportunity.
Historical display in the lobby downstairs. What the campus was.
The project manager has been on board for all the science projects to date, and will stay with us. And when introduced is Ben Johnson. In case you've not seen him lately, Ben is the project manager for all these projects as part of our planning, design, and construction department. Either senior project manager in the department.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
We'll just leave you for
it. Sure. Let me direct your attention then to some of the images that I've had prepared for you. And I'll wrap up on the science campus, something to give you a sense of what's going on. That's the, as we have affectionately known it, is the old College High Building, Science Technology Hall. Is going through at the present time a major complete renovation. I mean, that building is going to receive a complete interior renovation of the electrical, mechanical, plumbing, HVAC, fire safety, IT, video, voice, data. I mean, everything in this building will be updated and improved. We are already underway. It is a dramatic demolition process. I just wanted you to see the significance of the work that's going on. I apologize that it's not as sharp and clear as I would like, but it's just the room. Here's an example. When you really get into a building, you're going to do a full renovation, bring in heavy equipment. That's on the ground floor on the interior of the building just last week. Another project that is presently underway that we're all watching with great interest is the update of and the installation of the bag house at the steam plant. As you may have seen and heard about in the past, our steam plant was required to be updated to comply with Kentucky statutes and emission limitations for particulate matter of the stack. So, this project that's unfolding is going to allow us to heat the campus when we need it in a couple of weeks, and we are about 80% complete with the project. It is a $3.6 million project, and it is due to be completed and us to be operational on November 15th. We have a lot to do in the next few weeks. There is a fan going in for the staff. That's a fan going in. Okay, the next project I'd like to update you on is the stadium renovation. There is a shot taken from September 20, and if you were not at September 20 inaugural first game in that stadium, you missed a great event. I got a piece of trivia for you. That was not only the whiteout, that was a great crowd and so forth and so on, but a piece of trivia is that on 1968, 40 years ago, on September 21, so we held our first game in the renovated stadium on September 20. On September 21 of 1968, L.T. Smith Stadium hosted its very first game in the stadium. Exactly 40 years, within one day of 40 years. We hosted a new game, and just as a piece of trivia, I was at that game in 1968. Western played Butler and we beat them 35-0.
All right.
Now the West Stadium that has been coming along quite well. It's still very much a construction site. I mean, in case you didn't know it, we may have stopped construction and cleaned up the place and hosted a game, but it has been very much a construction site during that process, and is still very much a construction site. As you can see from right outside the window, there is still some work to be done for a practice field, and much of the exterior work is still underway. But the building has definitely come along nicely. And as you can see there, these photographs were taken just last week. We're still very much completing the interior work of the building. That picture doesn't come out as clear as I would like, but you can see to the left of the building where the practice field is being completed, and then the finishing touches to the glass on the Hall of Fame is going in. And this is the Hall of Fame. This was just taken a week ago. And here's a shot from 2 days ago. Same room. So it's taking shape. And so when you go into the stadium for the game tomorrow, you'll see more completed. As we mentioned previously, each game through this season, the project has been coming along. These are some interior shots of the East Grandstand, where the Physical Education Department will be housed. And it, too, is coming along, and it will be completed in time for use for the spring semester that's coming up. I wanted you to get a sense of status of some of the work. There's a classroom. I'm sorry, it's not very clear, but reception area there will be some athletic offices on this side. I believe this is the reception area for the track area. Is that correct, Wood? I believe this is the faculty lounge coming together. And so that facility will be completed within a month.
How much over budget is the stadium project?
It's not. We are within budget.
$29.5 million, and it has been a fight. But there have been a lot of change orders and a lot of prioritization and tough decisions. But we're within the authorization for the project. But I tell you, this has been a very complex, multidimensional project. The science building, by contrast, has had only 6 change orders, is on time, under budget, and rocking along. This project has almost been a weekly fight to keep it under budget, but it's to Wood's credit and Ann Mead's credit and John's credit, and he's the project manager. Well, we've had multiple project managers. I guess John is the primary project manager now, but we're staying within the authorized number.
When will Academic Athletic Building Number 2 be completely finished? L.T. Smith Stadium.
Both sides will be completed by mid-December, and there may be punch items going into the spring term, but we will be utilizing the offices and classrooms in each stadium in the spring semester.
Good.
also to the field or the lake sometimes in the winter, but that's a separate project that was funded from the NCD that we play against Kentucky.
John, we need to move along pretty quickly. We got to adjourn in 55 minutes.
There are some shots I wanted to update you on. When I talk about dramatic renovations, there's no more dramatic demolition occurring than there is at Van Meter. The back portion of the building has been removed. The area that was once the stage area is not completely open. We have heavy equipment in the building. One shot here in particular I want you to see. That's looking, of course, into the auditorium from the exterior through the back where it's been removed. It didn't come out as well as out of the light in this shot, but this is an interior shot looking through auditorium to the outside with heavy equipment being demolition inside the building. And there, of course, is something you've seen before, which is the rendering of what the elevation says where we're going to. As you know, we're putting a 14,000 square foot addition on the Preston Center. That project's been awarded. It's under construction. This is examples of the site that you've seen. South Lawn, where it will be on the corner of the building. There will be some additional interior renovation with that project where they will improve their locker room space to some extent and move some things around as well. In the July meeting, we gave you a more detailed report on the College of Education. And since that time, I wanted you to know that we are delighted to tell you that on October the 16th, bids opened for the College of Education building, and we have an awardable bid. We are presently under budget, and we hope to have construction start within the month.
Okay.
So this is a go project, and we're under budget at this time. It gives us some flexibility to do some things with the building that we previously thought we weren't going to be able to do, and we're delighted. This is a refresher. There's a shot from mass media of the site as it presently looks. I wanted to get one last shot of it before we actually started construction. And it will, of course, be on the corner of Regents and Normal Drive. Also in present design is the expansion to the Ivan Wilson Center. It is presently in design for an expansion to occur. We have just recently selected architects, and the committee is being formed, and we're getting started for that process. The reason I'm shooting these shots like this is the anticipation is that the addition is likely to be in the center auditorium area. We have a parking project that is going to be unfolding in the next month. The parking lot, as you know it, on University Boulevard will be extended from University Boulevard all the way up to Normal Drive. And that project bid just this past week within budget. And we are awarding a contract and we'll start work on November the 10th for that project. Just as a reminder and an update, the old WKU Owensboro campus project by Davies County has now awarded a contract to a company to begin construction. At the last meeting, I shared with you how there was a master plan for the site and that Building 1 would be built for the benefit of Western by Davies County.
I just want to make a point about that. First of all, it's Davies County. That's not the point I'm going to make. I'm just kidding. If Western wants to support the communities that are supporting Western, this is being built with Davis County bond, $6 million, totally from Davis County, nothing from the university. And if the mission of Western is to help economic development and job growth throughout the region, then I would just like to say that I hope the request for full-time faculty for that campus will be honored.
Well, it certainly is being honored, but we are. I've just set aside $1 million for equipping and furnishing the building.
Yeah, but so. We need full-time faculty
you're right.
Sitting
yeah.
there,
yeah.
not to be, you know, have people on TVs and things like that.
Right.
The last project I'll update you on is one related to our auxiliary services division. There is an improvement occurring at the present time at the community college on the south campus. It will improve the area with an improved bookstore and a small food court. You saw what we did downstairs just this past summer relevant to the main campus. This will be an additional expansion and investment into the community college and take it from where it is now and definitely improve its quality as well. It will be completed by the start of the spring semester and be operational on the first day of classes for the spring term. Any questions?
Thank you. All right, Jim, we have the financial
Good.
Budget committee.
We have one request here, a request for approval of resolution authorizing the insurance of sale of general bonds, general receipts bonds, 2008 Series A, in the principal amount of approximately $49 million, and authorization from the WKU Board of Regents, Treasurer Kay Ann Mead to accept the lowest bid, award the bonds, and report back to the board results of said action. Much discussion was discussed about that the last committee meetings, and we had some people in from, I think, Morgan Kinnon, and spoke to us also. We do need a second for that request.
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion on any of that?
Yeah, I want to ask Ann a few things. On page 61, there is a potential inherent conflict. You've got the financial advisor who's going to compute the net interest cost to the university, who also is going to submit a bid. The problem in these difficult financial times, as I see it, is the financial advisor may be the low bidder at a very high interest rate. You've got a situation today of an inverse yield curve where municipals are yielding more than taxables. Two points I'd like to make. I think Ann needs to have the ability, and this resolution doesn't contain it, to reject all bids if they're not in the university's best interest. The way I read this resolution, it says you shall accept the lowest net interest cost. Hopefully, your notice of bond sale had the ability for you to reject all bids. New York issued their bonds last month, and within a period of 24 hours, there was a movement of 200 basis points. 200 basis points amounts to several millions of dollars over the life of the bonds. Ann knows what she's doing, but she needs to have that authority. And secondly, if the financial advisor is the one who's the low bidder, he may not recommend to Ann to reject all bids because he's going to have a windfall. Those are my concerns.
And I spoke about that at one time at a meeting. Any discussion, anything to add on that?
Is that action that this board can take to amend this resolution?
That Ann have the yes, because you know what the marketplace is, Ann. I'd like to add the amendment that our treasurer, what is your official title? You got it. Your treasurer. Our treasurer have the authority to reject all bids if in her sole discretion, that's in the best interest of the university.
Okay. Is that a motion?
Yes, sir.
Just one moment. Do we need to have moved the motion first before
no.
we end it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the first order of business is we need to move this motion.
Okay.
No,
I thought you seconded it.
I thought so. Right. Well, I have a second. On
okay.
That. Yeah.
Then I moved
to amend.
We got an amendment to the motion.
We're all right okay. for that now. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We have an amendment to the motion. Do I have a second on that?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Larry.
Now we move on the motion as amended.
Now we move on to the motion as a whole. Yes, sir. And do I have a motion on that?
We'll move.
Okay. And all, second. Do and all in favor of the official motion?
Aye.
All right. Any other? That's it. We're covered on it. Good job. It's easy to spend $49 million.
One point to remind you of the committee meeting that you have a tentative schedule, but should the market say this is absolutely the wrong time to do this, we won't go forward and we'll notify you whether the bond sale doesn't go forward in the early
December. Because your last bond sale was very lucrative, about 4.5%. And there's really no reason our financial stability has changed at all. So I think we're from the same range.
We had our phone calls with the rating agencies last week, and they'll be giving us our updated ratings the middle of the week.
And we're very encouraged by that, by the way.
One thing I might say, that, and this has been spoke about a little bit today, about timing and the state of the economy. 2 years ago, the timing and the state of the economy was fine for a parking garage. Today, it might not be. 10 years from now, the state of the economy will be different. You cannot place your business decisions on that all the time. You must go forward. And I meant to bring that up a while ago. So we'll probably be in good shape on the garage. We'll probably be in good shape on timing. It is a great time to build now. Cost of materials are down, labor's down. So there's good and bad both with the economic conditions.
Which is evidenced by the College of Education building coming in well under budget in the bid process, which allowed some change orders, some ad alternates to be included in the project that we didn't think were going to be able to be included. So you're right, Jim. Thank you.
I want to speak to the update on employee benefit plan.
Yeah,
one other thing on this, we do have an update on employee benefits plan.
Yeah, I would call your attention, page 65, Tony Gleason is here. Suffice to say that our benefits committee continues to look after the welfare of our employees with diligence and skill. Patty is on the benefits committee and has devoted an immense amount of time, along with her colleagues on the committee in recent years, to ensuring that our employees have sound benefits and services. But what's most encouraging is if you look down the premium change schedule for 2009, you see that most of these are unchanged. And, Patty, I guess this is the fourth year in a row?
Fifth year.
A few years ago, we had one change for a small category of employees, but for the most part, our employees have not been hit with growing health care costs because of the degree to which we're managing our health care program as the primary role of the benefits committee. They deal with other benefits, but this is great news for our employees.
Yes, it is.
Great news for our employees. And so this doesn't require board action, but you need to know that benefits are an important part of the quality of life on this campus. And I'm very pleased with the state of our benefits provisions for our faculty and staff.
I bet it's time for your student affairs. There's two things. Let's be mindful of the time crunch we're involved in here today, more so than usual. So with that in mind.
Yeah. Well, we'll be very brief. We'll have Howard do an update of the fall resident hall.
Thank you. And I will definitely be brief. Before I give the update on housing, Jonathan wanted to make some comments on some of the progress that SDA has made this fall and give him an opportunity to distribute that.
Okay. I know that's I'll be very brief. You all will be getting a packet in the mail. It was supposed to come with your board stuff, but it will be coming in the mail. And also, I had a gift for everyone with some of our PR campaign, but that didn't get over here this morning. So, but we will be getting you that shortly. Student Government Association continues to be the voice of the students. I want to publicly go on record and thank Regent Hughes for attending our meeting a few weeks ago. She got to see exactly where a lot of these students have got a T-shirt from our Get on the Bus campaign, trying to get students out there registered to vote. And SGA continues to do that. We continue to work with the administration, the faculty, to get positive change. And you all are going to see a lot of exciting opportunities in the packet you receive in the mail. One of those is non-emergency medical transit. Hopefully we're going to be getting a system for students who need to get to the hospital who may not have transportation, who would otherwise pay for taxi cab services. Student government would pay that bill. So similar to our provider ride program. We're looking at textbook subsidy. We're looking at our own development. And we are so hopefully rapidly going in a good direction. And I hope to come back to this board in April with a good end of the year report.
I'd like to now introduce Ms. Kit Tolbert, who is the Director of Housing. And when we're particularly into those crunch times during July and August, Kit's the individual that is taking all those late-night calls and making sure that we find a spot for everyone. So I want to Kit give our update.
Okay. Well, what's coming around is just kind of a snapshot of our enrollment in the residence halls for this fall. It kind of goes along with what Dean gave you earlier in that our numbers, as you can see, took a dip last year but have kind of progressively increased. Wasn't quite sure of the information that would be of interest to you all, but just wanted to break it down in several categories so you could kind of see what our population in the residence halls look like.
This is great. This is exactly what I think the board needs to fully understand. And again, I go back to Jonathan's comment a while ago. The Student Life Foundation and working with our Housing and Residence Life program, just an incredible partnership that enables so many things to unfold in terms of the quality of our residential life on our campus. But it is a business plan first and foremost. And we simply have to have an occupancy level sufficient enough to pay the debt on the renovations that are taking place in our residence halls. So these numbers are very encouraging and bode well for our future and our capacity. So good work to everybody, Kit and Brian, on the entire Housing and Residence Life staff.
What's the significance of the March 31st occupancy?
March 31st is our priority deadline. It's a priority deadline. It's not a true deadline. We try and encourage our students to apply by that date so we kind of have an idea what the fall is going to look like. 10 years ago, we were at our highest point at our priority deadline. We knew we were only going to decline the numbers from that point to August. And as you can see, that's not been the case for the last 6 or 7 years. We have grown significantly from that deadline to opening. And what we would like to do is get back to letting our students feel a sense of urgency. They've got to apply. They want priorities. If they want roommates, they need to apply early and make that commitment. It makes it, as Howard alluded to, it makes it a little difficult in late July and August when we're having 200, 300, 400 students come knocking on the door. If we knew they were coming earlier, we could have communicated with them along, let them know what their assignments are. They could be making plans, that sort of thing. So the significance there really is that we would like for that deadline to become more important, and that's just the number we look at. We'd like to see that be a high point again.
Well, how many students do you lose a year? You know, you have the incoming students, but how many do you have that don't return to campus?
Well, we have capacity for, as you can see, our numbers right now are just a little over 4,800. When we do renewal in the spring semester, we will renew typically about 2,500 students. So that's what we consider our kind of our retention. We know we're going to lose juniors and seniors. We're going to retain the freshmen and sophomores. And then the balance of that is the freshmen.
Very good.
That will conclude our report.
Thank you. Thank you, Howard. Thanks, Kit. Now we have an update of the 2008-2009 meal plan.
We, in all jury services with the restaurant and catering group, are also very equally encouraged by how the program has grown, how the business has expanded. Gary DeGaros is going to distribute to you a couple of pamphlets and brochures that are used by the restaurant and catering group. One is for residential students, one is for commuter students. I want to draw your attention to a map that's in it that gives you a very quick overview profile of what offerings are available where, and it's quite impressive when you consider the scope of the entire program. The numbers are very encouraging. In the last 4 years, since 2004, for this fall semester, we have 1,641 more students on a board plan than we had 4 years ago. The program has also grown in terms of just simply dollar growth. And the program is now $4 million in annual sales more than what it was 4 years ago. And that trend is, you keep going back, that trend has been coming along very well. I suppose that what you saw this morning is a classic example of one of the reasons why we're experiencing growth. As the program gets better, as we have more resources to reinvest, we are reinvesting into the program in a way that improves the quality of life and the availability and accessibility to our dining program. So all of our numbers are encouraging, and as it keeps coming, we're looking for ways to expand and grow the business.
Takes a lot of options to feed 20,000 people every day.
This program here is just for commuter meal plan. There is a student meal plan.
Yes, there is.
Place.
We have meal plans for faculty and staff. We have meal plans for commuters that are designed for commuters. And then there are meal plans for residents. That's why the difference in the brochures.
But the student meal plan is not a required plan. They don't have to. Exactly.
There is a required meal plan for freshmen and residents for 1 year.
To give you the numbers, mandatory meal plans from 2007 to 2008 are up 121. We have 2,323 mandatory meal plan registrants, and we have 3,365 voluntary meal plan registrants among students. That's up 128 over last year. Total meal plans that students are purchasing is 5,688. We have 266 faculty and staff who have meal plans. So we have 5,954 total meal plans on our campus. It's a major business. And our campus dining and catering group is now zeroing in on a $13 million a year a business plan. In terms of cash flow.
Are they able to use the meal plans at Popeyes and other places?
You can use your meal card in a equivalency type program. So you swipe it in, it's worth a certain amount of money, like $3.45, towards whatever you purchase.
It's hard in an order off the menu to say, swipe it, you get a meal plan, because then you could order the whole menu, so you have to have a... dollar amount.
And they do a wonderful job with the students. You know, Tim Coley and the whole Aramark group. You know, they're starting a student food committee, and they really are adapted to student concerns. And I don't know how things were back when Regent Zelke was SGA president, but it's we're next door neighbors, so we can go down, and students constantly bring up concerns, and they do a really good job, auxiliary services, with the food service. So,
well, we were very impressed by what we saw this morning and glad to have that facility here. It's very nice at this end of the campus.
We're excited about it, too.
Yeah, thank you all. So you've done your SGA associate update. Do you have anything else to
add, John? And actually, they're starting a student food committee. So they're going to bring up concerns, you know, price of meal plans at different restaurants, different food options, what's working, what's not working. So.
Thank you. I think that's
cool. Thank you. Page 67, an action item to...